episode 6 of the Planning Period podcast. I'm your host, Brad Schreffler. In this episode, I talk with Gretchen Bridgers, the host of Always a Lesson podcast, and one of the nicest people I've ever met online. I wanted to talk with Gretchen for a few reasons. Number one, her podcast is an excellent, uplifting show for teachers. Second, she is tremendously knowledgeable about education, coaching, instruction, and the issues teachers face. And third, I thought she'd bring a nice positive spin to my show, which, while I wouldn't argue has been negative up until this point, is very much focused on the issues, and I thought Gretchen might focus on the solutions to those problems. In this episode, we do talk a lot about support, and both the lack of it for new teachers and existing teachers, but also the ways in which it is getting better, or at least that we hope it is, and the ways those issues are being addressed. If you like what you've been hearing, then do me a favor and spread the word. Share it out on social media and feel free to tag me on there. I'm at Brad Schreffler on Twitter or facebook.com/Brad Schreffler. And of course, you can always help out by giving me a rating on iTunes. So sit back and enjoy episode 6 of the Planning Period podcast, my interview with Gretchen Bridgers. Hello there, and welcome to episode 6 of the Planning Period podcast. My guest today, I am unbelievably honored to be able to welcome Gretchen Bridgers of the Always a Lesson podcast. I am, first of all, shocked that she even said yes to me to agree to be interviewed, but I'm really glad that she did. Welcome, Gretchen.
Thank you so much for having me. I am super stoked to be here and chatting with you about education today.
Yeah, I'm really thrilled. So, for anybody that doesn't know, I'll give a little background here. Gretchen is a podcaster, like I said, of Always a Lesson. She does a weekly podcast that's kind of just a Monday motivational kind of thing for teachers. Is that a fair description?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
And I stumbled across her through Chris Nessie, who runs the Education Podcast Network, and I found it through that. And I've, you know, really enjoyed your show. But what I found most fascinating, and I've called you out before on my show, is I reached out to her to ask for some feedback on one of the early episodes of my podcast. And not only did she give me feedback, she gave me like the most detailed feedback you could possibly put.
She wrote a borderline dissertation.
And then went and did another one for the second half of the podcast. So I just thank you so much for that. So I appreciate that.
You're welcome. I hope you didn't take it as these are all the things you wanted to fix. But the coach in me is like always wanting the best of the best to be there. And you just had so much great stuff. I wanted to make sure I was able to give you feedback to take it and run with it. So I hope you didn't mind.
Oh, I didn't. I appreciated it.
Okay, good.
And I've incorporated a good bit of it, I think, into the later episodes. So
awesome.
Hopefully you'll notice some of it tonight as we're talking.
Okay.
So Gretchen, if you would though, besides my little introduction, if you could just introduce yourself a little bit to my audience for anybody that doesn't know you other than what I just said.
Sure. So my name is Gretchen. I'm from Charlotte, North Carolina, and I taught for 8 years in the classroom. I did 5 in a Title I school, and then I did 3 in a high parental involvement school, teaching grades 2nd, 3rd, and 5th, and then decided I was going to work for the new teacher project called TNTP, and I coached new teachers there as well as provided professional development to the school district. And in doing that for 3 years, I found I could actually do this on my own so that I'm not limited to geography. I could really work remotely, and through technology, I was able to connect with lots of other teachers and school districts. So now I would say it's called consulting, but kind of coaching and mentoring and providing professional development, and I'm just absolutely loving it. And the podcast is just one part of that. So alwaysalesson.com has got the blog and the podcast and my educational resources. So if anyone's interested in connecting, you know, I love meeting new people. I say meeting, even though it's just online, but I love to hear where everyone's from and what their burning questions are.
We talked a little bit before we started recording, but I inspired by you going out and doing that and really doing that. But what I also just found interesting in that discussion is you call it coaching, not consulting. And I love that phrasing because so many people look at consulting, I feel like, as this, like, you're the sellout. You know what I mean?
Right. And I'm not the expert, but what I have noticed is I learn from these conversations too. I'm really questioning things that you're doing. And in doing so, you start reflecting. And then that makes me start reflecting. And through it, here we are both learning and growing together. It's just such a collaborative endeavor. It's really not this consulting role. I'm just going to tell you what to do, and you better do it to be successful. It's not like that at all. And if it were, I wouldn't be doing it.
Cool. I love that. Well, again, thank you for coming on. But let's go ahead and just get right into my first question.
Yeah.
Let's get right in that. So, I'm like hesitant to ask you this because your podcast is so positive and such a positive spin on everything. But we're going to start with the negative. What is the biggest problem facing education right now?
Well, unfortunately, it is a negative thing, but I do believe we have a lot in the works to make it better. So there's a positive spin. And my answer to you would be support, and it's twofold. So preparing teachers to get into the classroom, I think there's a lack of support. And then once the teacher's in the classroom, there's also a lack of support to get better. And for me, I thought that was only something that applied to me. But what I realized in connecting with other educators is everyone feels underprepared. And it's because a lot of the coursework that you have when you're learning to become a teacher is a lot of philosophy or history, and none of that is really practical. And then you get in the classroom and you're thinking, wait a minute, how do I do this? You maybe have a great teacher you're working with, or maybe not. And you just have to kind of fly the plane while you're building it. And it's impossible. And then once you land your job, you're thinking, great, you know, I finally know what I'm doing. And there's no support to continue to learn and to continue to grow. And if you're a new teacher, you know, it's hard to just improve and to learn and to meet the standards. And everyone around you is so great, and that pressure is there. And so I would say just the biggest issue in education is the lack of support.
You know, and I love that as a coach, you know, as a coach for instruction, I love that support is the issue because I agree with you completely. What you did mention, though, we have a lot of stuff in place to potentially fix that. What do you think is globally, I guess, or do you think is more of a local solution in place to make that to fix that problem?
Well, both, because what's happening locally is school districts are noticing, hey, we need to provide better support. So it started out as a mentorship. So, okay, all new teachers are going to get a mentor. That just has to be someone who's taught 3+ years. And then they realized, okay, that's not really a great match. We need to make sure they teach the same subject or the same grade level. Okay, and that worked a little bit. But then what happens after year 3? You no longer have a mentor. So you just stop growing. You're not even sure where to go. It's like you have no map or blueprint for how to get better, and it's really hard to know where to go, and you're lost. And so what's happening is this wave of coaching roles are starting to come out, which is how I got my start. So you're appointing someone who's great at instruction, but someone that's also really strong in relationship building, because they're going to be able to teach you what to do, but they really keep you motivated and excited and wanting to apply these principles. And so we're seeing that pop up all across the United States, and each district is in charge of whether they want to use their extra money, if they have any, for this type of role. And many schools are saying, I have to cut positions in order to make room for this. That means I lose a classroom, I lose a teacher, I miss a, you know, student teachers or whatever. And really what's the best thing is this investment of the coach, because you're going to end up freeing up some of this intellectual property, as the way I look at it, because each teacher is going to be getting better. They're going to need less support. And now you're paving a way to be able to hire another teacher down the road. But it's really hard right now to get principals to really get their minds around investing in this kind of a role. So I would say support is still the issue. I think locally it varies, but globally we're on the right track to fixing that with a coach or instructional role.
Okay. I agree. I feel, if I think back to, I mean, maybe a student perspective may not be valid, but I think from as a student perspective, I don't ever remember there being coaches in classrooms. And I definitely know at my school, we have coaches in classrooms helping other teachers on a regular basis. I don't ever remember that happening when I was a student, for sure.
Me neither.
I definitely feel like in my minimal experience, it has gotten more common in the years I've been teaching.
Well, and I would say even leadership is being much more open to being a lifelong learner. I mean, my leaders, when I first started, would never admit they made a mistake or that they had a leadership conference to learn better strategies on managing their school. But nowadays, it's all about being transparent, and everyone's admitting where they lack, you know, in this whole growth mindset. So I think it's just a shift in the culture in America that's allowing this role to kind of pop up and be successful. And now everyone's kind of learning and growing. And I just love it. I'm so glad that this is happening.
And it's got to be great for you because you're, you know, with experience in coaching has got to help, you know, with you, for people reaching out to you, I'm sure, for support and how to be a good coach.
Right. And I'd also say, you know, students are always the focus, right? So if their teacher gets better, then that makes a greater opportunity for the student to be more successful. And then these children who are going out into the world and going to be our future leaders are now better equipped. So it's a win-win no matter how you look at it.
Yeah. And I, you know, that's the same process that helps me sleep at night because I definitely miss the, and I don't know if you're in the same boat, but I still miss the light bulb moments and the direct interaction with students, but I feel better in that sort of exponential impact kind of thing.
Yeah. And as a coach, you and each district decides this, by the way, but for me, I can decide how I want to support. So I can just be there for the teacher and I don't interact with students at all. I could come in and do just a blanket professional development, and then I'm not working one-on-one with any specific teacher. Or I can do student-centered coaching. So now I'm in the classroom with the teacher, and we're focusing on whatever the standards are for that state and trying to help the child close the gap. And so I'm kind of like a peer teacher. So it looks very different. And because each district is able to decide how they want to utilize this role, we can make it whatever we want it to be, which is great.
You know, something else you mentioned, you talked about coming into this profession with kind of not practical info, with in terms of, you know, your content area, but you maybe don't have the practical educational stuff.
Right.
Do you see a path forward to a fix to that, or do you feel like that's being improved?
It is, based on Twitter. I hear a lot of discussion about how universities are revamping their course curriculum. And what I had suggested, I wrote a blog post about this a long time ago because I was just so fired up about it. But for me and my own experience, senior year was the only time I got into a classroom to teach. I did get in the classroom the years prior, but it was just to observe or write a lesson plan. I was not really interacting. And I thought, wow, what a missed opportunity for some folks to realize this is not really for me, or to say, hey, I'm already going to get better before I even get in there because of all the experience I have leading students, even if it's just, hey, work one-on-one with Johnny over here. So I think some colleges are realizing that there's this get it, do it gap, and they're trying to figure out, okay, how can I take the knowledge that I think is important for students to graduate with, but give them that practical application, the do it part where they can actually put it into motion and feel like, wow, all this money I paid for this degree actually is worth something. It really helped me. So it's going to take a while to get everyone on board, but I know a lot of universities are already reshaping, you know, the course, how they get them in and how early they get them in and how long they get them in. And I just think that's really going to benefit everyone in the long run.
Tell me, you know, you talk about there are a lot of different models for coaching out there, and I know they probably all have their pros and cons, but what do you feel like, from maybe a teacher perspective, given that they're most of my listeners, what do you feel like is the best solution to support teachers? What is the best style of coaching to support teachers?
Okay, my opinion, I want to make sure I say that very clearly. In my opinion, it is to work with someone in the moment. So go into the classroom when they're teaching live with students, because anytime you talk off the record, it's just not the same. There's so many things that happen in the moment that really alter a choice and alter the result, that it's just the most authentic way to practice. And so when you go in to a classroom and they're learning, and maybe the teacher isn't very clear with their directions, and I'll raise my hand and I'll say, oh, Miss So-and-so, I think I got confused. Could you say those again for me in sequential order? And then that's like a flag to her, like, okay, I need to go and break this down step by step. Or maybe if I don't want to embarrass her, I'll, you know, whisper coach. And so I'll go up to her and say that again, using first, next, then, whatever. Or maybe I'll videotape her and we'll debrief later. However it is in the moment, and getting them to make those changes so that students can be successful right then instead of waiting till implement it till tomorrow has really been the most effective, I think.
Cool. You know, I hope my audience as well, but I'm switching from, I've been a digital coach at my school for the last couple of years, and I'm switching to a full curriculum resource teacher role where I'm a full instructional coach. So I definitely take that information to heart because I'm wondering a lot how I'm going to go forward with this part of it.
Yeah, well, we can always chat as you start figuring that out, because it's also about your style. You know, where is your strength? For me, I know what great teaching is because I was a teacher, so I really don't mind timing out, hey, let me demo this for you, and I'll give directions to the kids, and then I'll debrief with them later. That doesn't scare me. That might not be for everybody. So I think really knowing who you are, what you bring to the table, that will help shape how and what you're going to do.
Cool. Do you struggle, and I guess in your role not so much, but maybe in your earlier support role, because one of the things I struggle with at least is getting support to the teachers that need it, but don't think they need it.
Yeah, that's great. So one way to do that is through your relationships. I know the ones that need it the most are the ones that don't want it. They don't want to interact with you. So if you are just available for questions versus, hey, come meet with me, I'm going to tell you what to do, they're much more willing. If you work with their friends and the friends kind of put it in their ear that, oh my gosh, my students did so great, or I feel so much better, that kind of gets them. And then always give them some sort of positive feedback, like, oh my gosh, you are so great at behavior management. Can you come demo this for another teacher down the hall? I would really love to pick your brain. And then you just have these informal conversations. I would call them water coolers, you know, just like passing in the hallway. And suddenly that trust is built. And then over time, you're really just able to say, hey, I have an idea for that class, instead of, you know, you really did a bad job, XYZ. And I think it's all about the wording, and I think it's about the relationship.
I think that's great feedback for anybody, either mentorship or coaching, to be considering going forward. So tell me, and maybe you kind of touched on it, but going into my second question here, what is something that you're doing, or in this case, since you're not in the classroom, maybe we're doing, that you think all teachers should be?
One thing I got to do was called a learning walk. Have you heard of that?
I have, actually.
Okay, good. So I also created this resource for schools. If anyone's interested in what I'm talking about, you can just go to alwaysalesson.com and you'll see resources there. It's on teachers pay teachers. But basically, it walks you through setting up a system in your school where you're going to go see another teacher when students are not in your classroom, but students are in this other person's classroom, and you're going to watch them teach. And what you're doing is looking for instructional ideas, you're looking at their management style, you're looking for activity ideas, you're looking at what's on their walls, you're looking at the vibe of the classroom, and that really is a way for you to go beg, borrow, and steal teaching ideas. And what I love about that is once you do it at your school level, you can then go to your district, go to different schools, because that's set up differently, different leadership styles, and get even more ideas. And that's the best thing I ever did was to be a better teacher, I had to stop teaching, unfortunately. I know that sounds crazy, but I would take a personal day. I'd get a sub. They'd come in, and I'd go to another school, and I'd shadow kind of their best teachers. And I was able to really refine my own teaching practice by watching other people in other environments. And it became such a big thing at our school that the principal said, well, everyone needs to do a learning walk. Every quarter, you have to get out and see three teachers that are not your grade level, are not your specialty area, that really going to push you out of your comfort zone. And our school just started taking off in terms of teacher confidence, that this team mentality throughout the school versus every grade levels. It was just fantastic. And I think that can really help transform some low achieving schools.
I agree so much. We were actually lucky enough to get some grant money at our school to provide professional development. And one of the caveats was that it had to support all of our teachers, mm-hmm. which, as you can imagine, is really difficult for professional development to plan. And what, this is a couple years ago, and what me and the principal and one of our assistant principals agreed on and thought would be the best option is exactly this, learning walks. But we did them systematically over the course of about 3 months, where I walked with a group of 5 to 6 teachers 2 times a day. I would have 2 groups a day, and we would walk into 4 or 5 rooms and look at just what was happening in those classrooms. And then we would reflect and debrief after each one. And across the board, it was the most powerful feedback, most powerful training we did, or professional development we did. And the feedback was incredible.
Yeah, because, you know, one thing I enjoyed was being able to see my peers in action. I mean, how many times do you hear through the grapevine, oh, so-and-so is a great teacher, and then you have the, like, to vote for each other on who the best teacher is, and you think to yourself, well, I actually don't know. I've never seen you teach. I've just heard that you're great, so I'm going to vote for you. And I'm thinking to myself, how crazy is this? We have got to get out and see each other, that builds relationships, camaraderie, and to give each other feedback. So not just go in and leave, but say, one thing I liked, one thing I think you can push and try next time. And that really helps the communication. And then I knew in the building who I was going to for what, because everyone was good at something.
You know, you talked about voting, and it's funny because I'm not trying to pull a humble brag here. However, I've been teacher of the year twice at two different schools each. And every time people are like, wow, that's really impressive. You must be a great teacher. I go, regardless of whether or not I am a great teacher, which I don't necessarily think I am, the voting has nothing to do with that. They have no idea if I'm a good teacher. None of these people have ever been in my room. And it's the same thing you said. And when we did learning walks, I heard once someone say, like, man, I've been a teacher for 25 years and I've never walked in someone else's room. Any other field, that would be the most ridiculous statement anyone could make.
I know.
And we have this belief. So maybe I guess I should ask this. Why do we have this belief that that's not okay?
Well, I think when you start reflecting on yourself and, you know, what advice would I give myself? And you're thinking, well, I don't really know. I've never even seen myself teach. You know, we don't video ourselves. And the feedback we get is a rubric. So that's not really the most helpful feedback. We realize just as a profession, there's just not a whole lot of practice and watching going on. When you have sports and you go to practice, the coach is always up there modeling something, and then everyone's doing it and getting feedback from the coach, and he's hollering and yelling, and then you go in the classroom and it's just like so not like that. And you're wondering, no wonder we're not improving. Students aren't improving with feedback. Teachers aren't improving with feedback. Schools aren't improving with feedback. It's just not existent. It's not part of the model.
Yeah, it's funny to me that you're hitting on. I think, you know, you go back to support. What is the biggest problem? One of the things that comes with support is feedback on your practice. And I'm sure you've seen the Bill Gates TED talk on, you know, the biggest problem with education in his eyes was that 98% of teachers have received the feedback adequate or, you know, acceptable, or, and that does nothing. What does that do for us? So what do you think feedback should look like then?
Well, for me, I always want action steps. So don't come in and say, I liked, because it's not about you. Right? I don't want your opinion. I want you to say, a best practice is blank. Here's where I saw it. Here's where I didn't see it. Here's what I suggest you try. I just want something applicable. I want to walk away feeling like I know what to do next, not thinking, wow, they really like me, or gosh, I have no idea what to do. I just want to walk away knowing, okay, I'm going to do these three things tonight. I'm going to implement them tomorrow, and it's going to go so much better. And when you give small, bite-sized pieces of feedback like that, it's easy to digest. It's encouraging because you feel like you now have control over the result, and you start seeing improvements right away. That's why I love coaching, because it's just so empowering right then and there.
Yeah, and you know, you're echoing a lot of what I feel like in terms of feedback, and actually going even further back, this is one of the reasons I loved your feedback to me. You modeled this even when I asked you for feedback on my podcast. You gave direct, actionable feedback. Whereas so many other people, I'll be like, especially friends and stuff, I'll be like, hey, check out this thing I'm doing. Do you like it? And they'll be just like, oh man, I really like it. I'm like, that's the worst
thing you've done.
What is that?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times we feel that pressure to do the same thing with our fellow teachers. If we did walk into their room because we're on a planning period and we had a quick question, oh man, you were doing a good job. Like, that does nothing. I don't need that information. Like, I agree with you. That feedback needs to have some sort of actionable component.
Right. And what's even more helpful is if you tell me why. You know, like one thing that I always do with new teachers is I'll teach a whole lesson like with my back to them. And I'll turn around and say, okay, what can I do better? And they're like, well, maybe you could be a little louder, or, you know, something unrelated to the back. And I said, okay, let me try something else. And I would do it and then, you know, face them the whole time and did nothing different about what I was saying, just moved my body language. And I'd say, okay, now what do you notice? And they're like, I don't know, you were just louder and more engaging. And I said, no. And I, you know, changed my positioning. And they thought, oh my gosh, that is much more effective. And I said, why is it so effective? And they're like, well, you're looking at me. I feel like you really want me to learn. Whatever their answers were, it drew them into what I was saying. And I was like, you know, the reason why you face each other is to be able to prevent any misbehaviors, number one, but number two, to look at their cues as to if you're being effective. Because if someone's confused, you'll see it in their eyebrows, you'll see it in their body language, their shoulders shrug over. And if my back is to them, I miss all that, and I'm just going to keep going and keep going and keep going. And by the time my lesson's over, I've missed so many opportunities to go back and help you. And so being able to say, okay, now we're going to turn around, we're going to square up our shoulders and stand still, they have the action, but now they know the rationale as to why it's effective. Because if you just tell someone what to do all day, but you don't explain why it's the better way, you have zero buy-in.
I mean, we know that to be true with our students, right? I mean, we would never, and so much of this I always laugh at as a coach, looking at it sort of with that big picture view. I always compare being inside your four little walls as a teacher versus having the outside big picture view. But we would never do that with our students. We would never just tell our students, acceptable, acceptable, acceptable. And yet that's what we get or give as feedback as administrators, and then expect better performance. And it's so much hypocritical thought process, it seems like sometimes.
Well, same with differentiation. It's like, okay, do this for your kids. But when it comes to PD, you're all going to get the same type. You know, even though you might be stronger in this area and you might be weaker, you're both going to sit through the same presentation. So what is that?
Struggle I deal with trying to explain to my administration. And it's funny because we're actually in the middle today and tomorrow. I'm in the middle of, I teach adults as well at night. I teach an alternative certification for people like me who are non-ed majors. And I'm in the middle of rewrites, and we were talking, we're like, yeah, we sit there and lecture for 3 hours a week about the importance of not lecturing in a classroom.
Yeah, death by PowerPoint is what I call it.
Sometimes we need to practice what we preach a little
bit. Yes.
Wow, such good stuff. I feel like I shouldn't be surprised that talking to you is like so enlightening and empowering. Like, I guess that should be what I expected. But I'm ready to go rush out and teach some people.
Good, yes!
You know, we're moving along real quick, but I want to get into my third question, because I feel like you're going to have an awesome answer to this. So tell me, who is the best teacher you ever had?
So I think it's a type of a teacher. I don't think it's a person. So for example, for me, I need a small classroom, and that doesn't mean I need less students, but I need you to shrink it for me. And what that means is you're honed in on who I am as a learner, that I'm not distracted by whatever else you're doing for somebody else. And so the teachers, when I look back at my experience, the ones that I was like, man, that was a great teacher. And yeah, they were fun and engaging, but they just knew what I needed because they were so tuned in to me. And it wasn't just me. It was all the students. But they really helped me put blinders on that I could focus in a loud classroom. I could focus in a heavily populated classroom. I could focus in a classroom that had different subject matters going on. And all of that prepared me to do well because this person really took the time to figure out how I needed to learn and was willing to give that to me.
So you're talking about a combination of student-centered differentiation and that relationship management component.
Yeah, I think it was the willingness of the teacher to put themselves last. Like when I think, okay, what's the one attribute that brings these people together? It's that they were willing to put me first. They cared to know, what does she know? What does she not know? How does she need to learn? And because they put me first, I benefited. I was able to really learn and grow at a rapid rate because they weren't saying, well, I don't like teaching that way, or I don't want to have to go find this material for her. You know, it wasn't about them. It was all about me and all about the person next to me and all about the person behind me. But I never knew that. I just knew all my needs were being met academically because this person kept putting me first.
I like how you're talking about both your experience compared with now your experience as a student now compared with the knowledge you have, and you've done that reflective component.
Right, because I think it's important to replicate what is great in the world. And if I didn't think, okay, what can I learn from those that came before me? I already know what I want to change, because that whatever's frustrating me always stands out in my mind. But the things that were good, I want to keep it. You know, so how could I replicate those people? And I wanted to be that exact teacher. I wanted to be the one that cared so much. I would go to great lengths to help a kid just be like, I got it. And for me, that just meant putting my needs aside. If I had to get there early, if I had to stay late, if I had to not use the whiteboard, if I had to turn lights off, I mean, whatever I had to do for that child, I was going to do it.
How do you, as a coach, get another teacher to that point? Can you, I guess, is another question, but can you get another teacher to that point when you just feel like they're not there?
Yeah, you got to show them. So I would teach them something for the first time, how to rollerblade, how to draw, whatever, something I knew they weren't good at. And I would keep telling them the direction in the same way that I knew wasn't working over and over and over. And they're going to start getting frustrated. And I'm going to say, I don't know, well, you're just not getting it. I'll say it again, you know, to the point where they're just like, please tell me another way. And then I'll say, and there it is. That's how students are feeling if we continue to give them the information in the same way every day, even though we think we're doing what's effective. It may not be what's working. And as you can see, I'm teaching you this simple skill, but it's not to your style, and you're frustrated, and you're not improving, and now our relationship isn't good. And that's how students are feeling. And so when you can get a teacher to feel what it is like to be their own student, that is where their willingness shoots through. And that's why I like learning walks, because they start seeing it from another perspective. And they're like, oh, man, I can see why this student struggles. This teacher, she moves too fast, or she's not paying attention. And you're like, how does that apply to your own experience? And then the more they reflect, they realize, oh, gosh, I got work to do.
I'm sitting here trying to imagine what my union response would be if I said, I'm going to go teach my teachers how to roller skate.
Okay, pick a different example. That might not be a good one.
Who is your favorite kind of teacher to coach? And I'm kind of all over the place tonight, and I apologize for that. But who is your favorite kind of teacher to coach? Because I'm sitting here imagining the different teachers at my school right now.
Yeah, I love teachers that are willing to do anything. And one thing I tell everyone I work with, as I say, just try it. Because you may think I'm crazy. You may have tried it a million times. But I am telling you for a reason. So just for giggles, give it a shot. And all the time they'll try it and they'll say, oh, gosh, this really does work. And I'll say it's because we kind of get in our own way sometimes. We've already decided before we try something that it's not going to work because of whatever reason. And so I like the ones that are like, yeah, I'm going to give it a try. Or, yeah, I don't mind. You know, they're just really willing to take risks.
If we could have a school full of those kinds of teachers, imagine what we could make some kids learn.
Oh, my gosh. I know, because those teachers don't see the four walls as being the classroom. They just see the whole world. You know, there's just no holding them back. And they think outside the box, and they're self-motivated. And they listen to feedback. They're willing to apply it. You know, they're not taking it personally. They learn from everyone they interact with, even if that person may not have as much knowledge as they do. You know, there's always something they can learn from an interaction. It's just contagious. Oh, my gosh, just thinking about that and how great that school would be is amazing.
So tell me something. Do you feel like when you started teaching, you were that teacher, or did it take you some time to get there?
So I was a pretty strong management teacher to begin with. So I was left alone for probably way too long because my instruction, my knowledge of how to teach something wasn't as strong, and I wish someone would have found me earlier to help coach me and really propel me forward, because they left me alone worrying about other people that I finally got kind of stagnant. But I think I was someone that was self-motivated, and I was always connecting and reading. Like, oh my gosh, before I was a teacher, I was reading all how to teach books. I mean, I've just always really wanted to be great at it. And so I think those first couple years, they saw me as, oh, this person could be a leader. They are someone that works well with others. And so I think I definitely had something that could have been cultivated earlier, but I would definitely say I was always open to anyone telling me what to do, because I was someone that liked information. I tell me how to do it, and I follow directions to the T. So just spell it out for me and I will do it just like that. And I wish there were kind of some more teachers that were like that I worked with. It was kind of very strict. Like, they only see things from one perspective, and that made it difficult. But overall, I'd say I was on my way to being a teacher like that if I had some more coaching, some more help, someone to really point me in the right direction.
It's funny to me how often as I go through these conversations in my podcast and just in conversations I have with people that their answer to my first question of what's the biggest problem in education is reflective of their own experience.
Mm-hmm.
And what I just heard you say is as a beginning teacher, I wanted to be great, but I didn't have the support. And now, years of experience, you still feel like a lack of support, especially for new teachers.
Not much has changed, huh?
And it's funny to me how much those things happen. And I've heard it happen, I guess I should say, with a lot of my guests or just talking to a lot of my fellow teachers.
Yeah, I wish it wasn't that way. And education, for whatever reason, is so slow to change.
You know, and I don't know what that is. I don't know what that reason is. I struggle with that a lot. I guess the obvious answer is we're generally speaking, at least in public education, a government agency, and government agencies are not quick to change generally. But is there a deeper seated reason, do you think?
Well, I think to create change, it's a lot of work. It requires a lot of money. You know, so time and money, we just don't have a lot of it in our profession. So I think those are two big barriers. People don't even start down the road of change. They just call it quits before they start.
Yeah, and again, we go back to that idea of any other career field, any other profession, to imagine that you wouldn't change with the evolving times. I mean, I know I have a teacher on my campus who's 92 years old.
Oh, wow.
And first of all, that's amazing. I mean, I cannot even describe to you how amazing that is every time. I'm like, that doesn't even make sense. But can I try to imagine how she must have changed her instructional practice. I'm not going to say she hasn't, but I know that she is resistant to change still. And if that resistance has been going on for the last 70 years,
right?
How can I sometimes find that as both a sign of hope and frustration simultaneously, where this is a person who hypothetically was born in a house with no electricity, not in a hospital, not like they were born in a house with no electricity and somebody said, go get water from the well, we're having a baby. And now she checks her email like once a week, which is, you know, something.
Right.
So I take that as both hope, but also if I can't move her any further than that, maybe there's no way to move anybody. I don't know. I struggle with that a lot, I feel like.
Well, I think the generation that's coming up is much more adaptable and open to jumping ship and trying a new route before you've really seen something through. So I think each generation gets better and there will be change. It's just slow.
You say adaptable and willing to jump ship before something comes through. I find just wants to jump ship as soon as something gets difficult.
That is probably true.
And I see it a lot with our one-to-one initiative, actually. And because our students are, we're a full one-to-one school and we're Windows laptops. And we struggle constantly with students who just walk into my student tech support and go, oh, it's broken. And we go, well, you just turned off the Wi-Fi. It's not broken. And they're like, well, it didn't work. So I thought it was broken. And I see that as a struggle going forward. Not that that's related, but, you know.
I do. I think they're much more helpless than the rest of us, but they also adapt better. So no one's perfect. You get something new, but then something else slacks, unfortunately.
Agreed. Well, I have one more question for you, and I will give you the option if you don't want to go there on the podcast. I'll give you that choice. However, I'm curious only for myself. We had to delay recording tonight because both of us had to put our children to bed.
Yeah.
So first of all, how old is your daughter?
7 months. Her name's Lily.
Very young. Well, then this may not be as relevant to you. I guess I should have asked that ahead of time. My son is 5.
Okay.
He'll be starting kindergarten next year. And I am personally struggling with the line between I'm a teacher, I'm a parent who knows too much. Where do you see yourself falling on that spectrum in the future, I guess I should ask?
Well, I'll think that I'm just not going to go to any of these parent-teacher conferences and allow my husband to do it because I don't want to jump into the coaching role, you know, and say, I have noticed that you send out your emails regularly. You know, I don't want to go there, and that just kind of comes out of me. But saying that, I am so much more invested than the normal parent. So I can see myself jumping in to volunteer in the classroom. Then I know a little bit more of what's going on and building a relationship with that teacher to the point they may just ask for suggestions or maybe just talk about something and I can talk through it with them. And so the more I'm just present, I'm willing and open, maybe they'll reach out to me and I can help. But in terms of, you know, what kind of parent am I going to be, you know, overbearing? No. Am I going to be, you know, the one that doesn't really show up? No, we'll be involved. It may just not always be me as I'm kind of worried about, you know, wearing different hats. But the best thing that you can do is be involved because of your knowledge. You just have to figure out what's the best way for me to form that connection so that I can use my knowledge to help my son, help my daughter, help the teacher, you know, and maybe it's just at home through homework. You teach them a different way or you help them do a project that's related on the weekend instead of drill and kill worksheets. You know, there's a way around it. But I'm hopeful that I'll be able to navigate it and inspire my child and the teacher at the same time without being, you know, the nagging parent.
Well, the plus side is you have some time. I can tell you for me, even in preschool and daycare for the last few years, as they've been trying to teach like numbers and shapes, it has been a bit of a struggle sometimes. And I certainly don't claim to be an expert on pre-kindergarten education by any stretch, or elementary education for that matter, but I definitely see the struggle coming. And unfortunately for my son, both his mother and I are teachers. So
double whammy. Well, I'll tell you, I taught Sunday school at my church and I threw out their curriculum. I literally said, I know where you're going. I think this is a great start, but I think we really need to dive deeper and get the kids really questioning and understanding what it is we're saying instead of doing all these fun games. And they allowed me to kind of change the way I did it. And then they started sending bigger groups to me and realize, oh, wow, you know, this is still great. It's still using the what we had here, but it's a little more innovative and more kid-friendly and definitely makes the student really have more ownership in the learning. And so I hope I didn't cross the lines there, but I know what you mean when you're looking at some of these programs thinking, you have got to be kidding me.
Yeah, I imagine, not that it's a unique experience, but when we were looking for daycares, it was – there were probably a lot of questions they aren't used to getting from most parents when I walked into a school. They're like, what exactly is your curriculum? Well, we use this. I go, no, that's not an answer to my question. I don't need a title. I need details.
That's right.
My instructional strategies. You know,
exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that reminds me, sorry to keep you a little bit longer here, but I also taught preschool when I was in college, and I couldn't stand that they were so free with their curriculum. And this is crazy because I'm an elementary brain. So for me, I'm very structured and, you know, looking at the standards and where do I need to be by when? And they're like, oh, it's kind of free. We're just going to teach the letter K today. And I was like, and then what? And how? And what do you mean? What's all involved? And it was just so not thorough enough for me to know where I was going and how I was going to even measure if I was being effective. You know, they kind of just wanted it to be daycare with some educational games. And it was just like horrible for me.
Yeah, it's, and that's, I guess, somewhat what I struggle with too with my son is like, I feel like he could be learning more, but maybe he doesn't need to right now. Does that make sense in any way to a fellow parent?
Yeah, because everyone's on a different trajectory for maturation. And so I think some students are ready to dive in, like, give me more. And some kids are just learning to be social. And that's really important at that young age. You have got to learn to share. You've got to learn to articulate yourself. You've got to learn to be okay waiting your turn. All those things are really developmentally appropriate. And so if they're not ready to recognize letters or sing songs or write their name, that's okay, because these other things are really foundationally more important for down the road, you know. So I think, again, differentiation comes up, but I think that that doesn't mean we're off the hook as educators, that we just don't provide it to the ones that are already.
Well, Gretchen, we've been a little bit of everywhere.
Definitely one of my least organized podcasts.
I'm fairly convinced it's all on me. I'm a little starstruck talking to you, I'm not going to lie. I'm going to throw that out there. I will ask for one more thing, though, if you could. Just your personal summary of what we've talked about here today. What would be your key point or your major takeaway you'd hope my audience gets from it?
Well, I hope everyone realizes that we all have each other to improve. And if you're willing to be open to collaborating with someone, whether you call them a coach or you call them a peer or a mentor, that the world is your oyster. You're really able to catapult your own learning and your potential if you just are willing. And I talked a lot about what I thought a great teacher was. If you're willing to put yourself out there and really learn about the students that are in front of you, you're really going to be great. And that's because you're going to collaborate with other people. So I hope that in the future, the education, that supportive aspect is going to improve because we are all willing to be part of the support system, not just expect it to come for us.
I love it. Perfect. It's so you and not my show, but we'll go with it. I love it. So, hey, first of all, again, thank you so much for sitting with me and talking with me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, this is fun.
Thank you so much. So if my audience wants to reach out to you, I know alwaysalesson.com.
Yes, and you can email me at Gretchen at alwaysalesson.com.
Cool. And on the Twitters, because that's where I tend to go. So G. Schultek?
Yeah, that was my maiden name, G. Schultek. You got it.
Cool. Well, Gretchen, thank you so much, and I really appreciate it.
Of course. Have a good night, Brad.
Thank you all for listening, and thank you again to Gretchen for being such an awesome guest and taking the time to sit with me. Also, as always, thanks to Kevin McLeod for our intro and closing music, Vicious. You can find him at incompetech.com. My next episode will be coming out on June 30th, and it will be my special International Society for Technology and Education, or the ISTE, conference episode. I'll be out there next week and recording interviews and discussions while I'm there. If you'll be at ISTE this summer, then make sure to reach out to me, and hopefully we can meet up in San Antonio. Until then, have a good one.